The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's up? This your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Shout out to super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
What?
Oh, shout out to the one and only Mr. Noel Brown.
Hello. What?
Hello. And shout out to you folks for joining us for part two of a very weird story about the U.S. Navy and the mob. They call me Ben.
What?
Oh, thanks, man. We've got some frenetic energy here. But this is a meaty two-parter for us, and off air, or at the very end, I think it was, of part one, Noel, we had promised to explain the name Baby Shacks.
Baby Shacks.
Yeah. Luigi Baby Shacks Minocchio is alive. He's alive right now. He's from Rhode Island.
Yeah, living out his twilight years at Martha's Vineyard, no doubt.
We figured out why he has the nickname Baby Shacks. For a while, he was called Baby Shanks, and that was incorrect. That bothered him. His name, Baby Shacks, Noel, you said it sounded like it might be a little untoward. I believe is the word you use.
Yes.
Well, he got the name for two reasons. First, people thought he had a baby face when he was a younger hoodlum.
But that nickname was already taken.
Yeah, so they could call him Baby Face. And he had a reputation for, quote, shacking up with a cavalcade of women.
Perhaps of the underage variety?
I think people he met in the mob lifestyle, but still Baby Shacks feels like a gross name. One time I was walking down Ponce, where our old office used to be, and I heard somebody with one of the most disturbing street names I've heard in a while, Little Daddy. This lady was yelling, "You stop right there, Little Daddy."
Yeah, maybe that was just a term of endearment, perhaps. I don't know.
I'm uncomfortable.
I remain uncomfortable, but yeah. So this is we're in part two. We've kind of got the meeting of the minds, the aligning of some very unlikely partners towards a common goal, that being fighting the Nazis.
Yeah, and we set up a lot of the context for this thing that becomes known as Operation Underworld. We're just going to dive right in. So if you haven't listened to part two yet, go ahead and pause. We'll wait, and we'll see you on the other side. Great. Welcome back.
Welcome. Yes.
Welcome.
Okay. So, Noel, I love how you set this up, because these really are strange bedfellows, right? This is like the wolves and the lions working together.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps some lambs in there as well. They've decided to truce and not eat each other, or at the very least, you know, maul each other. So this underworld operation underworld involves the underworld, you know, the world of organized crime. And we know even within the world of organized crime, you have these factions often aligned along ethnic kind of divides, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the Italian organized crime, you've got the Irish organized crime, and never the twain shall meet under most circumstances. But again, pretty universal idea that Nazis are bad. So this kind of became this sort of common cause that they joined forces with the government, who would be the greatest enemy of organized crime, you know, folks who would be normally seeking to put them away. Now, it's not like they're aligning with the FBI exactly, but still, the Navy, you know, it's a branch of the U.S. military, which is all kind of interconnected in that same way. So we talked earlier about how could this work, you know, down the line, where if they're kind of cooperating and using their underworld connections in league with the government, how could they be assured that this would not be one day used against them? I don't know that we necessarily are going to be able to answer that question. Mm-hmm. It does seem like that whole Nazi problem was enough to cause them to just kind of roll the dice on this one a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we've all been in those situations. Maybe not necessarily fighting Nazis, but where we find ourselves in cahoots with the strangest people, right, in our lives. And this happens across every industry, including the industry of crime. So we're setting up this alliance, right? The first guy to join in is the president of the International Longshoremen's Association, a guy named Joseph Ryan, along with his sidekick, Johnny Cockeye Dunn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had a bit of a squint. So next, we have the High Lord Executioner, as we talked about earlier, Albert Anastasia. And Anastasia was a big dog, and he was, you know, he struck fear into the hearts of even his allies. So it was a really big get to have him on board, because he was kind of the power behind the throne. And with his word backing the U.S. government, no one was going to turn down any of these requests for intel.
Right. Yeah. And so their coalition forms. Cockeye Dunn and a guy named Jerry Sullivan are overseeing the West Side waterfront. A guy named Joe Adonis partners with Frank Costello to look at the Brooklyn side. And a guy
is his
named
wife named Venus.
Wait, what?
You know, Venus and Adonis. Never, it's just silly. Greek mythology.
Yes. Adonis, Venus. Okay. Yeah. I'm with you. I think Adonis is such a cool last name, a cool surname, that guy probably didn't need a nickname.
Totally. I bet he was a real smoke show too. So, you know, when you join a union, you get something called a union card. You sign a union card. So they actually, that's sort of your ticket to the dance, right? And so a lot of these undercover naval operatives were issued union cards, which granted them a lot of access. They were able to infiltrate, you know, restaurants and bars and piers and truck depots and factories and various other of these mob-aligned businesses. Because, you know, I mean, the history of unionizing is very fraught. We obviously know unions, all in all, are a good thing when they look after the workers. But we know that from the start, with folks like Jimmy Hoffa, the Teamsters Union, and all that, there's always been this kind of mob influence looming over the history of organizing workers. Mm-hmm. So it does kind of give it a bit of a bad rap sometimes.
Yeah, agreed. And the Longshoremen's Association played a huge role in this overall, right? That sort of marriage of workers, organizations, and organized crime. The guy we mentioned earlier, Jerry Sullivan, he would later go on to describe how, I guess the best way to put it is, you know, if you're a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. Mm-hmm. And the mob has definite tried and true business practices. So they enforce things in a mob way. Sullivan says, Lansky was solving the problem for the Navy on the waterfront by the visible deployment of some of the most ruthless gangsters in the city. It was expected that the mere appearance of these men on the piers would serve as a deterrent, a warning to cooperate with the U.S. war effort or face the consequences. So they were just intimidating, right? Am I reading that right?
You are totally reading that right. And by the way, this comes from a fabulous piece on Warfare History Network by Gregory Peduto, Project Underworld, the U.S. Navy's Secret Pact with the Mafia. Not so secret now. But you're absolutely right. I mean, this was kind of a desperate times call for desperate measures situation pretty much across the board because, you know, mobster's gonna mobster. I mean, it's not like you're going to just all of a sudden start to play nice because you're working with Uncle Sam. And in fact, that's probably what Uncle Sam wanted. You know, they wanted them to flex on their behalf so that they could ensure getting the most accurate intel from some very terrified, you know, individuals who knew that if they didn't cooperate, they would have hell to pay in the form of, you know, busted kneecaps or worse.
Mm-hmm. And this is still overseen by Commander Charles R. Haffenden. And eventually, this strange alliance creates a mercenary shadow army. This is great. Mm-hmm. This reminds me of Shadowrun, honestly.
This is some real stuff that I want you to know kind of business.
Oh, yeah, here, totally. You got your street level thugs, the enforcers, the triggermen. You got people whose day jobs are murdering folks and other guys who are smuggling stuff. You got kingpins with international reach. And there's a lot of violence. Because again, these guys have a very specific understanding of enforcement and they're not worried about the constraints that government employees would have.
And that's exactly what we see with, you know, black sites and, you know, what do they call it? Like ghost recon kind of, you know, I'm talking about video games, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like a lot of these things where they disavow any knowledge of the operation in the event that someone's captured or discovered or whatever. And that is so that they can employ some tactics that are maybe not officially sanctioned by the U.S. right. government. And that is absolutely on full display here under Commander Haffenden, who, you know, couldn't have been blissfully ignorant to the fact that, you know, to make an intel omelet, you got to break some arms and legs.
Oh, gosh. And yeah, and definitely some necks, too. There are specific examples. Commander Haffenden sent this guy, Cockeyed Dunn, and he said, hey, go look into these two dudes that we think might be German agents. And he killed them.
Mm-hmm.
He went and killed them. Like, what do you mean? I took care of it. You said take care. You said look into
take
it.
Take care of them,
I
right?
looked into it.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know? Yeah, and again, in that Warfare History Network article by Gregory Peduto, he had this to say. I love the way he framed it. He referred to it as a mobland one-way ride, which I've never heard before. But you kind of know what that means. It's nice and descriptive. You're not coming back. There were also wiretaps being deployed that were recording some of the reports of some of these off-the-books operations. And here is a quote from actually one of these taps, one of these recordings, from, I believe, Mr. Cockeye. They'll never bother us again, he said, with dire finality. I think we know what that is. Yeah, they'll never bother us again because they're not going to be around to
bother
anybody.
They're not bothering anybody.
No, yeah. Exactly. Well, the Navy did officially, you know, kind of frown on this. They just couldn't keep tabs on somebody like that. And you're not going to be able to change. You can't take the fight out of the mad dog, you know? Ooh. You can't do it.
And here's the thing. Operation Underworld is a success. It works. Like Warfare History Network points out, once the Mafia got involved and they had the coalition solidified and they had united everybody, there was not a single act of sabotage, suspect fire that occurred. There weren't even labor strikes. You know, I think the mob was treating this as kind of a cosign from the government. Mm-hmm.
And go ham.
Yeah.
And wanted whatever it took.
Yeah, and wanted to show that they were good at their jobs, mm-hmm. which
they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, good being a relative term here. And they actually started kind of going a little rogue, right?
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Yeah, because remember, Lucky Luciano is locked up, but he's very much alive. And he's reading reports about all these Allied victories, and he says, I want to be part of the action. And he's thinking again in mafioso terms. He's thinking, you know, I did you a solid. I did you a favor, U.S. government. You know, you should be grateful because my people helped you over there at the port. And he's thinking, they'll owe me
leverage.
Even more. Yeah, mm-hmm. They'll even owe me more if I step forward for active duty. He says, I'm going to volunteer to act as a scout for frontline troops. I'll parachute into, this is true, this is crazy,
oh
right? I'll parachute into action behind enemy lines, and then I'll use my influence to help turn the tide of the war for the United States.
Yeah. And, you know, he was right. He was reading it right. The government was grateful. They did look at this as an opportunity. It ultimately ended up kind of working out, maybe not exactly the way he had planned, but definitely in a way that benefited Luciano. By January of 1943, the Allies were operating an offensive in the Mediterranean. They had defeated the Italians and the Germans already in North Africa, and we're now trying to open up another front in Europe to really put the screws to Hitler, because the Germans were busy fighting the Soviets in Russia. As we know, they were a very, very, very important part of this conflict, too, you know, in terms of, like, I think it was largely Russian troops that were the first to liberate the concentration camps.
Mm-hmm. And this brings the mob back around, because in addition to crime, the mob knows another thing very well, the nation of Italy, right? And so there's this thing called the Casablanca Conference, then U.S. President Franklin Roosevelt and British Prime Minister Winston Churchill get together, they chop it up, you know, they nosh, they have some snacks, they jibba jabba, and they decide that the Americans are going to support Churchill's plan to invade Italy. Under Mussolini, the Allies are thinking Italy is the soft underbelly of Nazi Europe. And we've seen it described multiple times in previous episodes, just as this. So they say, all right, how do we do this? Well, if we want to really sock it to Italy, then we have to attack the Sicily first. And we're going to do this with something we'll call Operation Husky.
Another fabulous resource for this one is Lucky Luciano and WW2's Operation Husky from the History Reader, Dispatches in History from the St. Martin's Publishing Group by Tim Newark. Highly recommend a full read of that one as well. So they figured out where the Allies were going to position themselves. And Churchill then was forced to admit that the Americans did have a pretty big advantage when it came to the Italians because of this situation.
Yeah. Yeah, because there are a lot of people in Italy who have a favorable feeling for America or the United States specifically. And there are also a lot of citizens of the U.S. who are of Italian descent. This led Roosevelt to write to Churchill in a telegram and say, "It is my opinion that our military problem will be made less difficult by giving to the Allied military government in Sicily as much of an American character as is practicable."
So despite being allies, I mean, Churchill would not have been fully looped in on this Operation Underworld situation, right? This was very much kind of a back pocket kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. This is off the
U.S. government. Very much so.
But they have suspicions. Yeah.
They have suspicions. And again, this, you know, whole like Italian-American, you know, trust or whatever thing really is just kind of a stand-in for some of these other things, you know, in terms of the position of the mob in the United States. He would have been aware of that at the very least.
100%. And, you know, there's organized crime in England as well. And we know that Churchill had doubts because he did agree with Roosevelt, but then he also secretly wrote to the UK ambassador in DC and said, I'm not sure that all the Italian American connects Roosevelt is talking about are on the up and up. I feel like he's talking to his ambassador and he's going, bro, I feel like they might be sus. I feel like they might be mafia people. And the ambassador wrote back and said, Italian communities here have an intimate knowledge and connection with Operation Husky and with Sicily. And he goes on to basically say, yeah, Churchy, I hear you, but we got to do what we got to do. Omelets, eggs, you know?
Arms, legs.
Hands, necks.
Oh, my.
This is going to be a great song once we get the beat done. Noel, I defer to you on that one.
Hey, thanks, bud. I'm on it.
So our cool improvised song aside, it is undeniable that the mafia is going to be involved in this because this is, in many ways, this is pretty much close to a home game for them. And there's a very important factor here. The mafia hates Benito Mussolini.
Yeah.
Hates.
For good reason. We talked about that at the top of the show. You know, even though these folks are in America at this point, you know, obviously, but they've got family likely, you know, at home back in Italy, and the kind of headquarters, they are working in league with, you know, OG, you know, Cosa Nostra, you know, in Italy. And Benito Mussolini is brutally cracking down on the mafia, essentially causing them to have to go underground. So they, you know, for practical purposes, are really against this guy. So Luciano and some of his Sicilian pals, you know, back home are able to give the Americans some very important information that helped aid their invasion. There's a report from the Joint Chiefs of Staff that recommended this as a kind of a, you know, a prerequisite for the invasion. It advised, quote, establishment of contact and communications with the leaders of separatist nuclei. Disaffected workers and clandestine radical groups.
Oh, yeah.
E.G., the mafia. That's in it. That's yeah. I love it. They said the quiet part out loud after saying the little veiled kind of version of it. E.G., the mafia, and giving them every possible aid. And huge shout out to all that's interesting.com mm-hmm. here. And John Kurowski, who fact-checked this article about Operation Husky, how mobster Lucky Luciano aided the U.S. in World War II. Great site and great read.
Yeah, love all this interesting. And the U.S. government goes for it. They get with the mafia associates. They say, okay, give us the pictures, give us the intel on the coastline of Sicily. Tell us about the harbors. They get all this information. It's like it's like the mafia is an honor student going for that extra credit essay. They get all that they wanted and more. And this information is crucial to the planning of the invasion, amphibious landing in July of 43. And believe it or not, some of these Sicilian, we'll call them contacts, so as not to disparage their good name, some of these Sicilian contacts get into the wet work. They fight alongside the U.S. forces against Germans and against Mussolini's Italian forces. And if you, most of the historical accounts you read about this, credit Lucky Luciano. He had the connects. Again, like we said in part one, the guy loved to organize stuff. This is speaking to his skill set, you know.
And it is called organized crime, after all.
Yeah, after all,
they're pretty good at organizing.
And Lucky was exceptional, even in this rarefied air. Codename Operation Husky probably wouldn't have been as successful as it was without him. Definitely, it wouldn't have succeeded without the mob. And you can read blow-by-blow accounts of how this went down and how these operatives, when they were coming in from the U.S. side, they got lists of names of people in different crime families, people hanging out in Sicily doing different rackets. And those guys teamed up. I believe it was 181,000 soldiers from the U.S. Army, 600 tanks, 14,000 vehicles, a lot of artillery. They stormed it, and the people at the very front were Commander Halfaden's officers from Operation Underworld. This was a mafioso production.
So this mafia safecracker, Paul Alfieri, is a real B&E specialist. So during the phase of Project Underworld that took place in New York City, he was crucial. He was a very important key player. He was what you might call a cat burglar. And he was able to infiltrate enemy safes and attain all of these important classified documents, ciphers, you know, the keys that you would need to crack, you know, codes, you know, of the enemy. This was a time where there wasn't really encryption, the digital sense that we know today. So it was all about these, you know, literal kind of like codes and code breaking and all of that was a really important part of military intelligence at the time. You have to have the key to understand, you know, the pattern and be able to like pull out the actual intel from these documents that would appear as gobbledygook. So he actually earned an award, I guess, a major reward, the Legion of Merit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is a mob guy who is raiding the headquarters over in Sicily with the help of the U.S. Army. And they say, okay, we're going to put together a group of insurgents. We're going to build our own army because everybody loves Lucky Luciano in the criminal underworld in Sicily. Every time they're asking someone for help, they bring up Luciano's name and boom, hearts and minds, gentlemen. And this plan to make an insurgent army would probably have worked very well, but the timing was off because other things were happening in the war. General Patton beat them to the punch. On July 22nd, he captured the city of Palermo, the capital of Sicily, just 2 hours before these other forces were due to come in and wreck stuff. So if anything, Operation Underworld was throwing gas on an already healthy fire, right? And so just 38 days after the invasion, Allied forces, including the mob, succeed in driving Mussolini's forces out of Sicily, and the battle for that part of Italy is over. It's kaput. It's done. They won, you know? And now we have to remember, here's what I think. I think for part of this, yeah, Lucky Luciano's a patriot. He sees it as doing the right thing. But I think at least part of his pitch for him going to Sicily in person was to get out of prison, right? Like at least a little bit.
Absolutely.
Okay.
This is a guy who thrives on crimes of opportunity. I mean, no question about it.
So he is, okay, I'm glad you say that because he's still trying to get out of prison. This whole Sicily invasion that's dependent upon his reputation, it happens while he's locked up by the same people he's helping, if you think about it. And let's go back to the mob attorney, Moses Polakoff, very cool name. In May of 1945, Polakoff says, you know, my client has done an invaluable service, has helped you win Sicily, has helped in a very real way strike a blow in World War II. And I believe that should at least get him parole. So the state parole board makes a favorable report, and this report makes it to the desk of the governor, a governor named Dewey, who used to be a former prosecutor who made his name by arresting a ton of people in Luciano's sex rings. My, how the turntables, as they would say on The Office.
They would say that on The Office. That's very true. So January 3rd, 1946, the governor signed off on Luciano's parole. He had served only 9.5 years of a 30 to 50 year sentence. Oh, how morality just goes out the window when Uncle Sam has something to gain. You know, it really goes to show that it's all kind of it's a very relativistic kind of way of looking at, you know, good and evil. Right.
And these very Governor Dewey is very careful about how he phrases his decision. So Luciano, again, for those of us playing along at home, he had been sentenced to 30 to 50 years in prison. At this point, he's been in prison for a little under 10 years, 9.5, a long time, but still not all the time he was meant to serve. And this is what Governor Dewey says. He says, and this is coming to us from the mobmuseum.org, which we're very much looking forward to visiting. He doesn't say, this guy is great. He says, quote, Luciano is deportable to Italy. Upon entry of the United States into the war, Luciano's aid was sought by the armed services in inducting others to provide information concerning possible enemy attacks. It appears that he cooperated in such an effort, though the actual value of the information procured is not clear. And he goes on to talk about how this is definitely not a pardon because he's definitely a criminal. And he's not, you know, a documented U.S. citizen. That's what he says. That's what the governor says. So we're going to give him a ticket to Italy.
And this is essentially like what? A deport? He's being deported, kind of, but like in a good way?
Yeah, it's like his sentence is commuted.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird. And a lot of Dewey's political rivals don't like it. You know what they say? They say, he got to you. The mob bribed you. That's why you're letting this guy go. And it even goes into Senate hearings in 1951. And there's a lot of murkiness that goes down in those Senate hearings. Like a lot of neither confirm nor deny what Luciano did. What we see here is a cover-up begins. You know what I mean? The Navy doesn't want to say, yeah, we got in bed with organized crime to win a war.
Mm-hmm. But again, you know, it's like the ends justify the means and all of that.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Hey, Noel. have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever been.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
But what happened when Luciano went to Italy? You know, did he go back to his old ways? He is technically on parole, but for all intents and purposes, it seems like he's kind of got a pass. So how did he conduct himself?
Yeah. This is a nice denouement to the story, right? So like you said, he tries to lay low and his name eventually gets back in the news. And there are these rumors that he is running a band of thieves known as the La Marca Gang. And they are kind of a Robin Hood enterprise, but they're running a human trafficking ring. And there are gossip columns that say he's in Paris and he's hanging out with an ex-lover, a former showgirl named Gay Orlova. And then there's other stories that say he makes it to Mexico. It turns out a lot of this is just scuttlebutt, right? A lot of this is just rumors. And, you know, like when people say they've seen Elvis or Kurt Cobain or Jim Morrison or something. But there is one that turned out to be correct. In October of that year, Lucky Luciano made his way to Cuba.
He sure did. That time, the mob was making waves into Cuba in the casino and hotel industry, specifically in Havana. So it really was kind of a home away from home for old Lucky Luciano. And he was present at one of the biggest mafia meetings in history, referred to as the Havana Conference. Because, I mean, you know, let's face it, the mob is so ubiquitous and far reaching at this point. They're kind of like their own government, you know, and they operate again. At this point, they've leaned up with the government. I mean, how much more, right. I guess, validation do you need? And also just in terms of like too big to fail or too big to actually be brought down. It wasn't until many years later with like RICO laws that they were actually able to target, the government was actually able to target the mafia successfully, which has largely led to it holding much less sway than it did in these days. But this really was the kind of like, you know, heyday for the mob.
Yeah, very much so. His timing is great. And Luciano meets with these different mob bigwigs, some you'll recognize from earlier parts of this story, like Frank Costello. And he greenlit a hit on a guy named Benjamin Bugsy Siegel because Siegel was not doing a good job running the Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas. And when you work for the mob, you don't really have an HR department mm-hmm. who gives you write-ups. So they killed him. But the conference was supposed to have ended on a pretty good note for a second. Luciano was once again feeling lucky, and then everything went wrong because it turned out the entire time he had been in Cuba, Harry Anslinger, who was head of the U.S. Bureau of Narcotics, and by the way, he was a real pill, not a good person, he had been targeting Luciano the entire time. He had people following him. He was convinced that Luciano was all the way back from Italy, very close to the U.S., because he wanted to start a drug ring and become king of the underworld again, boss of bosses.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff that I know about this scene came from shows like Boardwalk Empire and movies like The Godfather, and I know that a big plot point in The Godfather is like getting into drugs was sort of a new thing at the time, and like Don Corleone, you know, didn't want to do it. He didn't want to get into drugs, which is ultimately what led to his downfall, because he wouldn't play ball with whatever that rival gang was that was trying to get him to agree to do to sell heroin and stuff like that, because he thought it was bad for the community, you know. So this idea of trafficking drugs really was relatively new for the mob, and some folks weren't into it.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, you see this sometimes where people say, well, that's a dirty line of business, right? Like we're just criminal. We're upstanding criminals, right?
That's right. We have a code. You
know? We have a code. Yeah, yeah. Like thieves in law in Russia. But so the news about the Havana Conference breaks in the United States. And it kind of breaks because Frank Sinatra shows up at the conference. He does.
Yeah. He does chairman of the board, baby.
He does a concert. Oh, yeah. And so Anslinger is still like super mad about this. He's kind of a hater. He goes to the State Department and says, you have to force Cuba to deport Luciano. The Cuba government says, nah, we're not doing it. Anslinger goes over everybody's head. He goes straight to President Truman, and Truman cracks this deal. They cut off shipment for medicines to Cuba. And they say, we're not going to let these medicines get to your people unless you arrest Lucky Luciano and send him packing back to Italy.
Oof, that is greasy.
That's dirty pool, man. And Cuba, as you can tell, doesn't have a choice. So Luciano has to get arrested.
Yeah, isn't it interesting how, like, you know, trade embargoes and all that stuff are used throughout history as a way of, you know, penalizing folks for doing things you don't like?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's morally very dirty because you're talking about collective punishment. Innocent people. You know what I mean? But that's the card they pull. And so it's February 23rd, 1947. Lucky is arrested at a restaurant in Havana. And the head of Cuba's secret police at the time says he was arrested because they thought he might cause public disorder. And then Lucky Luciano, who has a charming way of speaking, tells a reporter for a wire service, UPI, he tells his side of the story. And he says, you know, if the Cuban government doesn't want me here, I'll just leave. He says, quote, if I'm going to have trouble on this side, I'll go back to Italy. I just want to be nice and quiet. I want to be kicked around like this for no reason. Which is just, I don't know. If you didn't know all the facts, you could identify with him. And anyway, this pursuit of Lucky Luciano continues when he gets back to Italy. And the Federal Bureau of Narcotics has a campaign against him for the rest of his life until he passes away in 1962. So what do you think? Crime boss? War hero? A little bit of column A? A little bit of column B?
I mean, he contained multitudes, that's for sure. Yeah, this whole story is bonkers because it really shows, again, you know, like I was saying before, the kind of moving target that is morality. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the ends justify the means and all of that stuff. Like it really calls into question, like, is the U.S. government really that different from organized crime?
Right.
Dare I say in my best Rod Serling voice, that doesn't even really sound like Rod Serling. But yeah, it really, I mean, that's why I think the story is so interesting. It's such a fascinating kind of intersection of these two worlds, both of which are kind of populated by mercenaries and thugs.
Yeah, no, true story. And this is where we're going to leave it today. What a ride. You know, shout out, not just to you, super producer Max Williams, but shout out to all the amazing mob nicknames, you know? I think we should save the other strange nicknames we found for a future episode.
You got to do three. Let me do a couple here.
Okay. Yeah. Do your favorites.
Yeah. Let's see. We've got Joseph Joe Bananas, Bonanno.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Okay. We've got John Jackie Nose D'Amico.
Oh, that's a weird one. I like it.
I think my personal favorite, let's see. Ooh, it's a tough one. I'm going to go with Israel Ice Pick Willie Alderman.
Ice Pick Willie?
Mm-hmm. And his name wasn't Willie or no. William. His name was Israel.
That's great. That reminds me, I was talking to Max off air, man. I can't remember what led to it. Maybe we were stranded somewhere on the road. Remember that time when I went a little nuts and just like wrote 50 nicknames for you and our pal Matt Frederick and like insisted on pitching them to you?
No insistence required.
To be clear, they were not all winners, folks. But I think collectively, our favorite one was Maddie Both Hands Frederick. Or was it two
both hands?
Both hands.
Not only two hands, he's got those. He uses them both in equal measures. we've talked about this before, but there's an episode of Monty Python where there's this composer being interviewed on like a chat show, and his nickname is Two Sheds, and they go into this whole thing about like how he has two sheds, and he's like, I'm not here to talk about my sheds, and the interviewer keeps diverting the conversation back to insisting that he describe his sheds as opposed to his me. I'm here to talk about my work, my music, not the sheds. And also, I think, like, you know, two hats is good. Someone that maybe wears two hats.
I like nicknames with numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a specificity to it as well. It's like anytime I'm at a Chinese restaurant and there's something on the menu that has a number involved. I'm like, 3-cup chicken? How specific? Sign me up. I don't even know what's in the cups. But we hope that you have enjoyed this two-parter. We wanted to start off strong with 2023. We hope your week is going well, and we can't wait. To be back with you next week. We've got even more, it's in the name of the show, Ridiculous History.
Sure is. And you, too, can become a ridiculous historian. We'll give you your Ridiculous History Union card. All you got to do is go to Facebook, find the group Ridiculous Historians, and boom, you're in.
And with that, we also want to thank Christopher Hasiotis, Eves Jeffcoat, Mr. Alex Williams, who composed this banging track. Who else? Oh, Jonathan Strickland, yeah.
Of course, the Strickster. The Trickster. He's a very puckish figure. The Quizster. That's it, not the Trickster. God, we should know that by now. He should be. He'll be arriving any day now. He's been bugging other podcasts, but we'll have him back soon.
He's busy.
He's a busy man. It's not like it's our choice, but it'll happen one way or another. In the meantime, you can also find all three of us on social media if you wish. I am at How Now Noel Brown, exclusively on the Instagram. I neither tweet nor TikTok. I'm still working on that Pinterest board, but I have a feeling it's a bit of a fool's errand. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, well, of course, you can find me on Farmers Only. If that's not your speed, go to Instagram in a burst of creativity. I'm at Ben Bullen, B-O-W-L-I-N. You can get a preview of all kinds of weird secret projects that I'm currently working on. You can also find me on Twitter, where I'm at Ben Bullen, HSW. Hey, you might say, I don't want to go to Twitter just to see you, man. I agree. The only reason I'm on Twitter is because I hear Max Williams hangs out there.
Yes, I'm hanging out there at ATL underscore Max Williams.
All right, let's go invade Sicily.
Let's do it. We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.